Seamus, The Case of the Mason Jars, Part 8, A Trip to Reading. It's based on the book by John MacDonald, A Bullet for Cinderella.
As I went up the steps to the door, I could hear a class of small voices chanting something in unison. It was a sleepy, nostalgic afternoon sound. There was a young woman typing in the outer section of the principal's office. She looked up at me, obviously irritated by the interruption. "I'm trying to find a Mrs. Davis who used to teach here. She taught fourth grade, I believe."
"Sorry, I don't know her."
"Could you look?"
"Nope. Confidential information."
"Are there any teachers here who would have been here when Miss Davis was here?"
"How long ago was she here?"
10-20 years ago.
"Miss Carby has been teaching here 22 years, third grade, room 16. This floor, just around the corner."
I got to room 16 just as the dismissal bell started ringing. The class doors opened. The school was filled with an explosion of excited children. I watched a round, pale woman with hair like steel wool and small, sharp, dark eyes follow the children out of the door of room 16. "Miss Carby?"
"Yes. I'm Miss Carvey."
"My name is James, Hunter James. Did you know a Miss Davis who used to teach here?"
"Of course. I know Maddie Davis very well. That reminds me. I should stop by and see how she's getting along these days."
"She's in town?"
"Oh, yes. The poor thing."
"Is she ill?"
"Oh, I thought you knew. Maddie went blind about 10 years ago.
"Could you tell me where she lives?"
"Not offhand. You could Google it. She's on Finch Avenue in an apartment. I know the building, but I can't remember the apartment number. She lives alone."
A quick search gave me Miss Carvey's apartment number. It was a small ground floor apartment in the rear. Music was playing loudly. It was a symphony I didn't recognize. The music stopped moments after I knocked on the door. Miss Davis opened the door. Her hair was white and worn in a long page boy. Her features were strong. She could have once been a beautiful woman. She was still handsome. "I'm Hunter James. I was wondering if you remember Floyd Vincent?"
"Oh, come in. Of course I remember him. He was a charmer. I was told how he died. I was dreadfully sorry to hear it. A man came to see me 6 or 7 months ago. He said he'd been on the same police force with Floyd. I never could quite understand why he came to see me. His name was Stucky. He didn't seem quite right, if you know what I mean."
"I was on the force with Floyd too, Miss Davis."
"Oh, I'm so sorry. Mr. Stucky is probably a friend of yours."
"No, he's not."
"That's a relief. Now don't tell me you came here to ask odd questions too, Mr. James."
"Fairly odd, I guess. After Floyd was shot, before the EMTs got there, he spoke about a girl named Pixie. I've been trying to track her down to deliver a message from Floyd. And one of your other students, Trixie Janzik, told me that you wrote a skit based on Peter Pan for the fourth grade class that Floyd was in. I'm wondering if he meant the girl who played the part in the skit."
"Trixie Janzik was such a shy, sweet child. She suffered a great deal of teasing because of her teeth."
"The teeth have been fixed. She's married to a man named Everett, and she has a couple of kids."
"That's good to hear.
Do you remember who played the part of Pixie in the skit?"
"Of course I remember. Her name was Susie Haver. I've got a picture."
She came back with a glossy photograph.
"I had a friend help me sort these out after I learned Braille. I've marked them all, so I know this is the right one. I believe Susie is in the back row toward the left. Look for a girl with a great mass of black hair and a pretty, rather sullen face. I don't imagine she was smiling."
I took a picture of the photograph.
"Susie was a little older than the others. She was rowdy, a troublemaker, but I liked the child. Her people were very poor. She had a lot of spirit. She was a very alive person. I couldn't help but wonder sometimes what has happened to the child. I gave her the part of Pixie in an attempt to get her to take more interest in class activities. I'm afraid it was a mistake. I believe she thought it was a reflection on the way she lived.
Was Floyd friendly with her?
Quite friendly. I sometimes wondered if that was a good thing. She seemed quite precocious in some departments, and Floyd was a very sweet boy.
Could he have called her Pixie because of the skit?
I imagine so. Children dote on nicknames.
I want to thank you for your help, Miss Davis.
I hope the information is of some use to you. When you find Susie, tell her I asked about her.
I'll do that. She went with me to the front door.
Mr. James, are you in some kind of trouble?
The abrupt non sequitur startled me. Trouble? Yes, I'm in trouble. Bad trouble.
I thought so. I felt a sense of worry around you.
When I left, I shivered despite the warmth in the air. I had discovered Pixie. There had been a hint as to what she was like in the very tone of Floyd's voice. Weak as he was, there had been the echo of lust. Pixie would know. The phrasing was odd. Not Pixie knows, but Pixie would know. It would be a place known to her, but she wouldn't know about the money. I sat in my car for a few moments. I didn't know how long my period of grace would last. I needed to find the elusive Pixie and try to make sense of the relationship between Stuckey and Pratt. It came to me that I'd been a fool not to search the body. Too damn hungover to think straight at the time. It was doubtful that Stuckey would have been so clumsy as to leave anything incriminating on the body itself. I did not know where to start. Why had it been necessary to kill Pratt? Was it related to Pratt's job? Pratt was looking for Mary Horseman's husband. Prasad was satisfied that Horseman and Lizette Vincent had run off together. He had a witness to the actual departure. Yet Pratt had been poking around the cabin the Vincents used to own. Had Pratt found Horseman? Or was Pratt after the money as well? I wondered if Pratt had somehow acquired information that a sizable sum had disappeared from Vincent's business ventures over a period of time and had put two and two together. There was only one starting place with Pratt. That was Mary Horseman. I realized that I did not dare make any effort to get a hold of Mrs. Horseman. It would link me too closely to Pratt. Susie Haver, then. I would look for her. The house was on the riverbank. It had a sagging porch, auto parts stamped into the mud in the yard, dingy laundry flapping on a knotted line, an ancient tire hanging from a tree limb. A thin, dark girl, about 12, was carefully painting an overturned boat, doing a good job of it. A little dark-headed boy was trying to harness a fat, humble dog to a broken cart. A toddler in diapers watched him. Some chickens were scratching the loose dirt under the porch. The children looked at me as I got out of the car. A heavy woman came to the door. She bulged with pregnancy. Her eyes and expression were unfriendly. The toddler began to cry. I heard her brother hiss at her to shut up. The woman in the doorway could have once been quite pretty. It was hard to guess how old she might be. Is your name Haver?
Was once. Now it's Scroggins. What do you want?
I'm trying to locate Susie Haver.
For God's sakes, shut up, sniveling genie. What do you want Susie for?
I've got a message for her from a friend.
She makes a lot of friends, I guess. She doesn't hang around here anymore. She's up in Redding. God knows I never get up there. The old man is dead, and Jack is in prison. Andy can't stand the sight of her, so why should she bother coming down here? Hell, I'm only her only sister. She sends money for the kids.
What does she do?
She goes around making friends, I guess.
How do I get in touch with her?
Cruise around Redding. Try the Aztec and the Cub Room and try the Doubloon. I heard her mention that.
It was 60 miles to Redding. It was twice the size of LaBrook and had a lot more neon. Lots more uniforms patrolling the streets. I made my way to the Strip. There, the neon really blossomed. There were enough cars in the lots, enough rough music in the air, and enough places to have your money taken away from you. I made my rounds of the bars, ending up at the Aztec. In each place, I asked a bartender about Susie Haver. And on each occasion, I received a blank stare, a shrug, and I never heard of her. The cadence of the evening was beginning to quicken. All three places were pretty much the same. There was a smell of money. The games were hidden, but not hard to find. I was striking out on finding Susie Haver. The way Mrs. Scroggins had spoken of her sister gave me reason to believe I could get assistance in finding Susie from the police. The police department was a brand new building. It hadn't taken on the smell of urine and desperation yet. I told the desk sergeant what Mrs. Scroggins had said about how to find Susie.
There ought to be something on her. Let me check it out. Wait a couple of minutes.
He got on the phone.
She's been booked a couple of times as Susie Haver, but the name she uses is Sierra Minette. She calls herself an entertainer. She's a high-end escort. The last address is the Glendon Arms. Both times she was booked, it was on a variation of the old Badger game. They couldn't make it stick. So watch yourself. She plays with rough people.
I thanked him and left. I went to the Aztec first. I went to the same bartender.
Find that girl yet?
I found she calls herself Sierra Minette.
Hal, I know her. She comes in here every once in a while. She may show here yet tonight. You an old friend or something?
Not exactly. I tried some other bars. They knew the name there also, but she hadn't been in. I had a steak sandwich in the doubloon. A girl alone at the bar made a determined effort to pick me up. She started a conversation a shade too loudly with the bartender and tried to drag me into it. She was a lean brunette with shiny eyes and trembling hands. I ordered a refill for her and moved on to the bar stool next to her. We exchanged small talk until she pointed up at the ceiling with her thumb.
Going to try your luck tonight? I'm always lucky. You know, there's some fellows that I know they wouldn't dare try it at the crap table without they give me some chips to get in the game.
I don't want to gamble.
Yeah, sometimes I get tired of it, too. I mean, when you just can't seem to get any action out of your money.
Do you know a girl around town named Sierra Minette?
What about her? You looking for her?
Somebody mentioned her. I remembered the name. Is she nice?
She's damn good looking, but she's crazy. Crazy as hell.
How come you think she's crazy?
Well, dig this. There are some important guys around here. Guys that really got a yen for her. A deal like that, you can fall into everything. Apartment, car, clothes. They'd set you up, you know, then all you got to do is be nice and take it easy. Not Sierra. She wants to lone wolf it, and she keeps getting in jams that way. But Sierra, she does as she damn pleases. And she don't like you, you're dead. She wouldn't spit if your hair was on fire.
I think I see what you mean. She sensed she had made some sort of tactical error.
Oh, no. Don't take me serious. I'm not that type girl. I like a few laughs. I like to get around. My boyfriend is away, and I got lonesome tonight. So I thought I'd take a look around, see what's going on. You know how it is. Lonesome. Sure you wouldn't want to see if you're lucky?
I guess not. She pursed her lips and studied her half-empty glass. She tried the next gambit.
You know, the way they charge for a drink, they must make a hell of a lot out of a bottle. If a person was smart, they'd do their drinking at home. It would be a lot cheaper.
It certainly would.
You know, if we could get a bottle, we could take our hair down and put our feet up and stream something on television and have a ball. What do you say?
I don't think so.
My boyfriend won't be back in town until next weekend. I got my own place.
No thanks.
What do you want to do?
Nothing in particular.
Joey, what kind of place you running? You got a dead customer sitting here. He's giving me the creeps.
She moved over two stools and wouldn't look at me. Within 15 minutes, two heavy, smiling men came in. Soon she was in conversation with them. The three of them went upstairs together to try the tables. I hoped her luck was good. I wandered back to the Aztec. My bartending friend told me that Sierra Minette was out in the casino and back, escorted by a general. He said she was wearing a white blouse and a dark red skirt and had a scarf that matched her skirt. I tipped him and went out into the casino. I bought some chips. The large room was crowded and the glaring light made the faces of the people look sick. I spotted the general across the room. He had three rows of discreetly faded ribbons. Susie Haver stood beside him and laughed at him. It was the face of the school picture, matured, not as sullen. Her tumbled hair was like raw blue-black silk. Her brown shoulders were bare. She was moving like molten honey. She had an almost feral look. A mature woman so alive, she made the others in the room look two-dimensional, as though they had been placed there to provide their drab contrast to Susie. They were at the roulette table. I began playing, but watched her instead of the wheel. I won $36 on the fourth spin. I began to play the red and kept winning. Sierra gave me a few irritated glances. Finally, the general had to go buy more chips, and as soon as he was gone, I moved next to her. Susie Haver?
Do I know you?
No, I want a chance to talk to you.
How do you know my name?
Susie Haver? Through Floyd Vincent. Remember him?
Of course. I can't talk now. Phone me tomorrow at noon.
She scribbled down the number on a napkin, glanced around, and pushed it at me. I went away, taking with me the memory of her dark eyes and her low, hoarse, husky voice. I drove back through the night to LaBrook. It was well after midnight when I got there. I went to bed and went to sleep at once. An hour later, I was awakened abruptly from a nightmare. I was drenched with sweat. I had dreamed that Pratt rode my back, his legs clamped around my waist, his heavy arms around my throat. I walked down a busy street with him there, asking, begging for help. But everyone would scream and cover their eyes and shrink away from me. I knew that Pratt's face was more horrible than I had remembered. No one would help me. Then it was not Pratt anymore. It was Floyd who rode there. I could smell the earth of an open grave. I woke up in panic, and it took me a long time to quiet down again.
Thank you for listening to Seamus. If you like this episode of Seamus, please leave a review and tell your friends. Seamus, The Case of the Mason Jar, Part 8, A Trip to Reading, is based on the book A Bullet for Cinderella by John MacDonald. Hunter James was played by Tom Hinton. The school receptionist was played by Marcia Hinton. Miss Carvey was played by Julie Poulin. Miss Davis was played by Susan Green. Mrs. Scroggins was played by Julie Scala. The Aztec bartender was played by Patrick Brancato. The Reading police officer was played by Nick Yamateo. The barfly was played by Jean Phillips. Susie Haver was played by Marcia Taylor. I'm Leslie Woodruff. This episode of Seamus was written by Max Rees and directed by Tom Hinton. Seamus is a New Meadows Media production. All rights reserved.